All right, I'd like to welcome everyone that is here locally, as well as all of those around the world that are live streaming with us tonight. We are very excited to have Rob Jacobs here with Stand With Us Northwest and the other Shaliachs. Let's give them a big hand. Thank them for being here with us today. Well, I like Rob Jacobs, who's been, you're the main guy with Stand With Us Northwest, aren't you? Yes, come on up. Let's give Rob a big hand. He's going to introduce the other Shaliachs.
So I wanted to start by thanking El Shaddai and Pastor Mark, not just for the opportunity to bring our speakers, our Shlichim, here today to have an opportunity to welcome one and hear from our past Shaliach the stories and the events that have taken place since he left. He spent the summer in Israel during this most recent conflict with Gaza. But I wanted to thank El Shaddai and Pastor Mark and all of you for being here for the last 3-4 years after we learned about you and connected up, and being a respite, being a place where our speakers can come and find an audience that just accepts them and celebrates the work that they're doing. And I think that's so important. You know, you might think that it's easy for our speakers like Chen and Tamir to go out and speak. They speak at high schools and they speak on campuses and churches, civic organizations. Last year, Chen spoke to more than 38,000 people. And the reason that they do it is because they're countering the misrepresentations and the lies that are so common nowadays, especially on campuses, but increasingly just in the general dialogue about Israel. And a lot of it, I think, is just an issue of education. I think so many people hear from somebody that they know something that sounds terrible about Israel, and they trust this person's judgment, just as that person trusted somebody else's judgment. And they repeat the story, and a story that gets repeated often enough becomes somebody's truth. And the important thing is that they have not had the opportunity to ever, in most cases, really meet an Israeli. And if they have, they haven't talked about the issues that are of concern because they're too polite or because the Israeli is here on vacation and the last thing they want to do is sit there and start talking about conflict and politics and everything else. And we have these young people who are just tremendous, and they dedicate a chunk of their life. You know, it's ranged from 6 months, 5 months, to a year and 6 months. And what they do makes a huge difference. And they do it today, for example, they were in a high school. They spoke 3 classes, one right after another, longer classes. So by the time they were done, they're exhausted. But there are times when they go to high schools, for example, and they speak to 7 classes in a row. And they're saying the same talk, answering different questions, but they have to be there and be able to be themselves and to show the energy and the feeling that they have for Israel. And at the end of the day, they're wiped. And not only that, but when they go to campuses often, it can be a really ugly situation. And so to be able to come here and to be able to speak to you and to have this forum that Pastor Mark, you provided, I think I remember our Shaliach beforehand, and he came and he had the headset on and he was striding back and forth, and people were getting up and applauding him. And when he walked out, he was so replenished. And so that's a long way of saying thank you. Thank you. So I wanted to briefly, I'm going to sort of introduce them before they get up here, both of them. They're going to come one after the other. Chen has spoken, as I said, to 38,000 people, now more since he left us. I think Chen, it was, 60,000, somewhere. And you'll get that in hearing his talk. He's you know, experienced. He's comfortable. He's most of the times we brought our speakers after they burnt out. This time we're bringing Tamir. This is his first time giving his talk. So we were in a Starbucks just a couple of minutes ago, going back and forth over it, making last-minute edits. And I scared the dickens out of him by telling him how many people are watching this. And so be gentle with him. Both of them have terrific experience in Israel, and both of them have grown up in Israel. And both of them take parts of what they're going to be talking about and spread that message around, and you'll get a piece of it. It's edited down because you already know much of what they would talk about in terms of history and things like that. Let me invite Chen Mazig to come up and speak to you. Chen? And when Chen is done, he'll invite Tamir, and then after Tamir has spoken, we'll have Q&A, and Pastor Mark, you'll moderate?
Great.
Thank you all again so much.
All right. Good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. I think it's my third time, right? Yeah, it's such a pleasure being here among friends. So I don't think I need to really go through the whole introduction. I'll be brief about introducing myself. My name is Chen Mazig. I'm 25 years old. I'm from Israel. I was born and raised in Israel. I was the Stamud as Shaliach to the Pacific Northwest. I still remember how I was in Israel. I just got out of the army after 5 years of service. I'll tell you more about my service in a minute. But I got to the Stamudas office. Back then, I saw a lot of bias with the organizations that I used to work with. I worked with the United Nations, with different human rights agencies during my military service. And they were all so biased about Israel. And I looked for an organization that will help me bring my message out there. And the only organization that actually wrote back to me was Stamudas in Israel. And they invited me for a meeting. We met, we worked together, and then they said, hey, you know, we have two positions opening. You can volunteer either in Seattle or in San Diego. And they said, well, you know, San Diego has good weather, but there's no really, you know, you're not going to face any harsh anti-Israel people. It will be very nice and fun, but in the Pacific Northwest, although the weather is not that good, you're still going to you're going to actually do work. You're going to talk to people and try to convince them. It's going to be very hard. And I was foolish enough, or maybe smart enough, to pick Seattle. And they were right about the weather. It's really horrible. I'm sorry, but you know we can agree about that. And going back home, I mean, I live now in Tel Aviv, and it's just so different and so better. So you guys just need to come. I think I made the right decision. I faced some of the worst anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, racist, very hateful statements. People called me horrible names without even knowing me, without even me getting in on stage. They already hate me. And it made me look inside and try to understand where it comes from, and recognizing that there is evil people out there, and there is people there that are trying to convince other people in lies. And I don't think all of them hate us. I think that it's a small percentage of them that really hate, but they are able, as Rob said, to say those lies over and over again and make people believe in it. And for people like you to stand up against them, it's just admirable. And that's why coming here every time is such a, you know, it gives me this feeling that I'm putting air back, and I know that there's people out there that are standing up with us, that are supporting us, that know which side is right and which side is wrong, and are standing in the right side, because this is the most important thing. And today we all ask ourselves where we stand, and when you stand with Israel, you are, I'm telling you, you're standing with the right side of history, and history will be the judge of the coming events. So thank you all, and it's a pleasure to be here. And so since I got back home, I got back home this summer, in June it was, I believe, and boy, that was quite welcoming. As soon as I got back home, there was the announcement of the three Israeli teenagers that were kidnapped by Hamas. I'm sure you all know, but just to make sure, Hamas is a terrorist organization, genocidal terrorist organization that is calling for the genocide not only of Israelis, but all Jews. And that's not me saying it, it's their mandate, and you can go online and look it up and see what they're saying. Quote, unquote, we will kill all the Jews until the last one of them will hide behind trees and rocks, and the trees and the rocks will cry out and tell us where they are so we can come and kill them ourselves. This is a racist organization that is oppressing minorities, oppressing women. The Christian community in Gaza is decreased throughout the years since Hamas gained control. And this is the organization that we are facing. An organization that just recently the European Union has taken them off of their terrorist list. Crazy. And they are controlling Gaza. They are doing horrible things in Gaza, but also doing horrible things to Israel. So it's not only Israel that is suffering, it's also Palestinians that live under Hamas control when the world is giving a blind eye to it. So Hamas kidnapped the three Israeli teenagers. One of the most horrifying phone calls I ever heard was played on the Israeli news channel of one of the boys that reached out to his phone while they were kidnapped, and he called the police and he said, "We've been kidnapped." And you hear someone speaks in Arabic and tells them, "Put your head down, put your head down." And then you hear three gunshots. Horrific, horrific death. And so Israel was trying to look for those kids. The IDF was trying to look for them. While Israel was trying to look for them in the West Bank, from Gaza, rockets has been increasing, launching more and more rockets from Gaza. Hamas was launching more and more rockets, making it unbearable to live. And what resulted with the retaliation, you know, it takes a lot to get the IDF to respond. But we have responded this summer. We retaliated to those attacks. In pinpoint airstrikes, trying to avoid civilian casualties, fighting in a way that is very strange for the Middle East. I mean, if you look at countries in the Middle East, they're not really accustomed to international law or to Geneva Convention. They don't know what it means. When Israel was trying to inform Palestinians in Gaza to run from, you know, 20% of the Gaza Strip was the one that was actually in a combat situation. Only 20%. Israel was trying to let them know that this area is going to be under attack. Strategically makes no sense, but leave that aside. Letting them know so the civilians will run away. Hamas doesn't get that. They send the civilians back there, and they said, "You're going to stay there." They moved their headquarters into a hospital in Gaza, hiding behind the wounded people of Gaza in a war. What kind of sickness mind is that? When Israel was dropping leaflets, letting them know that we're going to attack, they send the people back in, and they said, "If you are going out, we are going to kill you. So you choose. You are either killed by us or be in the mercy of Israel." And Israel has mercy, unlike Hamas. And we tried our best to avoid civilian casualties and avoid collateral damage. While UN schools were used to hide rockets, UN schooled. Horrible, horrible summer that we've been through. Thousands of rockets almost every day, sirens, people running to bomb shelters, suffering in levels that Israel didn't know until now. And as I said, I lived in Tel Aviv during the summer, and my mom lives in Petah Tikva, and my mom is probably the strongest person in my life. Her name is Carmela, and she's amazing. She's really the rock of my life. She taught me everything. She's a strong woman, and I still look for her for advices. And I went to visit her in Petah Tikva, and we were watching the news, and, you know, again, it's 24 hours news, no movies, no serious, just news, and where rockets have fallen, where there was more attacks, and suddenly there was a siren, and we noted that there's a siren. You have between 15 to 30 seconds. Oh, I wish minutes. to run to a bomb shelter. And I'm holding my mom's hand, and I'm running with her to the bomb shelter, and I'm saying, come on, come on, we need to run. And we get into the bomb shelter, and we're waiting for a few seconds, and we hear three explosions in the air. And then we wait for a bit, and then we know it's safe to go out and go back home. And I'm telling her, come, and I'm looking at her, and I see that she has tears in her eyes. And it's really hard for me, because it's my mom, and don't mess with my mom. And I'm telling her to come, and we're getting back home, and I was really disturbed, because I don't think I ever saw her cry. She never cries. Maybe once I remember it when her dad passed away, but other than that, I don't think I ever saw her crying, and that was the first time, the second time, I guess. It was really disturbing, and we got back home, and I got her water, and I'm saying everything is okay. The rockets were intercepted by Iron Dome. Iron Dome is the device that shoots down rockets. Israel had to develop a device that shoots down rockets while they're still in the air. It's like rockets. It's like bullet hitting a bullet. In this way, 85% of the rockets are being intercepted while they're still in the air. Divine protection. And I'm telling her everything is okay, and then I'm getting a phone call. And I'm taking it, and it's the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, calling me, and they're saying, Chen, I haven't heard them from them for a few years. And they're saying, Chen, we need you. And I'm saying, why do you need me now? We've been through this war for almost 2 weeks now. Why do you call me now? And they're saying, well, your unit needs you, the humanitarian unit that is doing humanitarian activity, helping Gaza and helping Palestinians in Gaza. And I think it was the first time that I challenged my military service and what I was doing, because I looked at my mom and I was so disturbed. Do you want me to go help Gaza when rockets are coming on me and my family and my mom is crying here? I need to go and help the people in Gaza. Took me a few minutes and he said, well, you know, we're not really asking you. Come tomorrow. come to the base tomorrow. We want to see you there. And I'm saying, okay, so I'm going to my military base, and they're saying, Chen, you'll have to head the humanitarian operation room. We're bringing in the International Red Cross. We're bringing the United Nations. We're bringing non-government organizations in what seems to be arguably the first of its kind humanitarian operation room in a military base run by the military that is fighting the war. Instead of a military to be focused just on fighting a war and defeating the enemy, here the IDF is putting so much effort and so much resources in protecting the civilian population on the other side, because unfortunately the leadership on the other side doesn't care about their civilian population. So the IDF is the one picking the glove here and taking care of it. And we worked together. We made sure that there was water pipes that were attacked by rockets launched from Gaza. Water that was supposed to supply water to Gaza was rockets fell on those pipes, and we had to fix them. It was an obscure situation when technician have to run to a bomb shelter when he's trying to fix a water pipe for the Palestinians. Another case of feeder lines, of electricity lines that were blown up, and we have to do that the same thing. Make sure that there's enough food coming in, make sure that there's enough medicine. In one case, we found out that there's a lack of chemotherapy equipment in some hospitals. We can't be in touch with the Hamas, but we were in touch with doctors on the Palestinian side, and they told us that they needed some more chemotherapy equipment. We reached out to different organizations, and no one could actually find this equipment on time. Guess who found it? The Israeli Ministry of Health actually had some, and 3 million shekels worth of donations were loaded on trucks and drove into Gaza. Hamas refused to accept it because it's Israel that gives this medicine equipment. So here Hamas has two options. One option is to save its people's life and to make sure that people that need chemotherapy equipment will get it, that people that have cancer will be able to continue fighting it and dealing with it. The other option is to not take the Israel equipment, make sure that their people know that Israel didn't help them, and in this way winning a propaganda war, and by the way, losing a few hundred of people lives because of it. And they chose the propaganda war. And they're choosing the propaganda war every time because they don't care about their people's lives. While Israel cherish every life, and while in the IDF, when they train us, they tell us that every life matters, and every life is a ward, and every person is a ward, and you will do whatever you can to protect people's life, because we celebrate life in Israel. We celebrate life in this darkness of the Middle East. And for Hamas, it's completely the opposite. It's celebrating death, it's cherishing death, it's bringing the New York Times, it's bringing the BBC, it's bringing the CNN, and just showing them death. While in Israel, we never show death. We never show, take pictures of, just a few months ago, there was a terror attack in one of the buses that I take in Tel Aviv, where 10 people were stabbed by a terrorist, Palestinian terrorist. And you didn't saw any pictures of bodies. You saw some pictures of the bus, but no bodies, no people falling down, dying, because we don't play this way. This is not what we do. We cherish life and we celebrate life, and that's the moral difference between us to Hamas. And that's what I did this summer. I have other stories to share. Maybe later in the Q&A we'll be able to share some more. But I was reminded again how, I think Colonel Richard Kemp was a colonel in the British Army, and he said to the UN a few years ago, that during his time working with the IDF, he found that the IDF is the most moral army in the world. And if I'm using his quote, I can tell you that I'm a living proof of that. Because what I did this summer was something that I would never imagine any other army would do. And we did it because that's the way the Israeli army works. And I went to share this story, this kind of stories with students. Since I got back to Israel, I still work for Stan with us. And every once in a while, I'm going to share my story with students around the world. Sorry, it's hard to talk so long. And I went to London, the UK, and I was invited to speak in King's College, one of top universities in the UK. And when the anti-Israel students found out that I was invited to talk, they sent letters to the administration asking to don't allow this murderer to speak on our campus. Chen Mazig is the commander of the IDF. They promoted me. which is good. I don't mind. But that's awesome, actually. That they said Chen Mazig was participating in the genocide in Gaza. Genocide, the population in Gaza during the summer increased itself in 1,500 people. Hell of a genocide. It's not really what genocide means. Saying that, again, murder and all those things. I never killed anyone in my life. I mean, I once punched my brother, but I'm telling you, he deserved that. He was really annoying. It takes a lot to get me to punch someone. A lot. And all these horrible things, but still, I said, okay, I'm not afraid. I'm going to speak there. I'm going to share my stories because I'm bringing the truth and I'm bringing the light and I'm bringing everything that Israel stands for. And many times in my talks, I'm saying that Israel is fighting hate with love. That's what Israel means for me. But it doesn't mean that I'm weak. It doesn't mean that we are weak. We'll fight with love, but we are strong. And we will speak out, and we will fight back. Don't confuse our love with weakness, because it's not. And I went to the college, and I got in and into the room, and 100 students got in the room. And I started my talk, and I was sharing my stories. One of the stories was the story that I just shared with you, and it was all about peace and how I inspire for peace, and how I want to live in peace one day with our neighbors. And then we went to the part of the Q&A. My talk is very short. It's 10, 20 minutes. And then most of the part is the questions and answers. And we opened the floor for questions and answers. And I'll show you in the video what happened.
Is that Palestine? And do you see this as a viable
We won't discuss, guys, if we won't talk about those things, we will never achieve peace. You don't understand that you just push peace prevents other people from going to events who want to debate open issues.
Why is it staying and asking questions?
Come on.
You're shutting down free speech. You're not preventing myself.
Can I ask you to exit? If you're leaving, please leave quiet.
So you heard me begging them to stay and saying you're not shouting me, you're shouting yourself. You're shouting free speech, but it's your own free speech. You have a chance to grill an Israeli, to ask the toughest questions. And they just did this walkout of 50 students leaving the room with signs, killer, murder, oppression, had blood on their hands, like red color on their hands and doing like that. It was a bit disturbing, but I think it really shows you which side is interested in a dialogue and which side is not. One side was begging for them to stay. One side was telling them, hey guys, let's talk. We have to talk. We have to figure it out. If we can't figure it out here in London, how do you want us to figure it out in the Middle East? And they walked out. And I think it really showed the audience the reality. And the rest of the audience, the other 50 students that stayed in the room, after they left, I said, so just what I said now, and they got up and applauded me, and they were able to see which side is the right side here, I guess. And later on, there was still other events on campus, but I spoke in other universities, in Bristol, for instance, Bristol University, it's in the UK as well. I was accepted very warmly, and some of the, I don't know if anti-Israel, they were group that was critical of Israel came to the conversation, and they were really amazed to hear my stories. And this is what we do. We share our stories, and we try to change hearts and minds through personal stories, because people connect to people, and that's what we understand in STEM with us. That's why we bring a shaliach every year. That's why I was here for 2 years, and now Tamir is coming. It's going to be amazing, too. And, you know... I'll finish and I'll let Tamir speak. I'll just say that I'm looking at the Middle East today. I'm from my home, and it's scary. You look to Iraq and Syria, and you see what ISIS is doing there, beheading people, killing people, doing horrible things. You look to Lebanon, and you see Hezbollah, the party of God, that believe that they need to kill all the Jews to get to salvation. You see, in Gaza, Hamas is getting stronger and stronger. You see, in Egypt, the government there is fighting with Hamas, and they're killing each other in the Sinai Peninsula that has become a terror hub. You look at Iran, and you shake your head in disbelief that this is going on, that there's actually a conversation with the government that is saying very clearly that they want to have a nuclear weapon to use against Israel. It's scary. It's scary. And you see how women are being oppressed. You see Boko Haram. You see organizations, terror organizations, Islamic Jihad, other terrorist organizations getting stronger and stronger in the Middle East. The Arab Spring that everyone promised us did not work. And there's darkness, and hundreds of thousands of people are being killed. And yet in the New York Times, what you read, the headlines are usually about Israel. It's usually criticizing Israel. And I cannot understand that. But I can tell you one thing. Israel is fighting hate with love. But we are strong. And we learn the lesson of the Holocaust. And we learned a lesson that my grandparents had to learn when they were forced out from Iraq and Tunisia when my great-grandfather was executed. We learned our lesson. And the lesson is that we will stand up for ourselves. And we don't need the world to stand up for us. We are strong. We have the ability to do it. We will do it with love. But we are strong. And evil will not prevail. And I want to tell you one more time, as I said in the beginning of my talk, I'll say it again. It's heartwarming to see people like you that care. But each one of you is ambassador of education. You can change people's mind. try to talk to your friends in a way that they will understand. Sometimes our friends see things differently, so try to adjust the things that you say that they'll be receptive to. And we can change the world, I'm telling you. I've seen how it takes one person to step up and say this is wrong for others to follow him. And you guys can do it too. And we're doing it, and we are fulfilling the dream of our ancestors, the promise of the Lord that Israel will be strong, the Jewish people will be strong in our homeland, in our ancestral homeland that we are indigenous to, the land of Israel. And that's it. Thank you guys so much, and it's a pleasure to be here again. Thanks.
Thank you, Chen. Hey guys, shalom lekulam. So my name is Tamir Gofstein. I'm 27 years old, and I came from the city, from Israel, and I came from the city of Rishon LeZion. Does anybody know what Rishon LeZion means in Hebrew? Rishon LeZion. First two. Zion, Zion is Zion. This city is the fourth biggest city in Israel, which is, I think, the population of it, it's like 230,000. It's pretty much like Tacoma, if I'm not mistaken. It's a city that is close to the coastline of Rishon LeZion, of Israel, I'm sorry. And this is the place that I spent most of my time. This is our coastline of Rishon LeZion. This is the place that I spent most of my time. It's beautiful, isn't it? This is actually the first street that was built in Rishon LeZion back in 1882. This is one of the first cities that was built in Israel. And this is really close to my home back town. This is my school. I'm a second year student in Tel Aviv Jaffa campus. I study political science and communications. Tel Aviv Jaffa campus is a very normal campus, the same as everyone else, the same as every campus in Israel. It's a mixed school where Jews, Arabs, and Christians can go together and learn, get education without any discrimination or anything like that. Everybody can just go and study and get education for themselves. Me and my friends from school, as you can see, are very different people, everyone. And mostly what we do is sit in circles and play with our phones during the classes. So I'm a part-time musician, I can tell you that, and I believe that music, for me at least, is a way to express myself to the outside world, a way to connect with people. Every time I'm sad, mad, happy, nervous, excited, this is what I do. I just take my guitar and just play my heart out towards everyone. So this time I didn't bring my guitar with me, but I hope next time maybe I'll give it a show, so we'll try. In order to understand my story, I will have to go back to my family. All of my family was born in Ukraine. Ukraine is located in Eastern Europe, as you can see here, in the border with Russia. It's now in the news, there's a big conflict war with Russia. If you heard about it, Putin wants to just take Ukraine over, and the Ukrainians want to be part of Europe. It's a big mess over there. And I hope it will get better soon, because my family is still there, and I've got a lot of friends over there. My family, as you can see here, this photo, amazing photo, was taken back in the late 80s, I think. This is me over there, the one, the little one over there, if you can see it. It's a typical Ukrainian photo, if you can see. Nobody's smiling. I don't know why, what's wrong, what's going on over there, but nobody is smiling. My parents had a pretty normal childhood in Ukraine. All of my family actually did. But it changed once they finished high school. My mom wanted to be a computer engineer, and she tried to apply to different universities and colleges in Ukraine. Now, she wrote her application, she had excellent grades, she had hobbies and everything that you just could ever think of. She wrote her essay, she went to the first interview, and she was rejected. She didn't know why, but it happened. She didn't give up. She said to herself, I'm going to do it again and again. She applied a second time, and the same thing happened to her. Again, she was rejected. And she was a great student, don't get me wrong. She was really good, and I'm not biased. Don't. The third time, she went to her interview. The interviewer looked at her application. Sir, activities, grades, excellent work. But in the bottom, some, I don't know, in the USSR, they used to write their religion on the bottom of the page. And it says Jewish. He asked her, are you Jewish? She said, yes. And he was honest enough telling her that, I'm sorry, but we reached our quota of Jews that we can get in this university. She was shocked. Just imagine, because you're Jewish, I can't get education? Did I do something wrong? I was born like that. It's like, she was shocked. She couldn't believe it. But again, she knew that education is important. She can't give up on that. She's going to apply again and again and again until someone will take her. And she did it. Finally, she got herself into college. And she finished in the top of her class. She became a computer engineer. She met my dad there. And when my brother and I were born, they decided they don't want us to feel the same way they felt. They don't want us to be discriminated against based on our religion. And they knew that the only place they can ever be free and equal among others is going to be in Israel. They didn't just want to be tolerated in the state. They want to be equal. They wanted to feel home. And that home was Israel. Growing up in Israel, as you can see here, this is me over there with the teddy bear. And this is my family in the middle. Growing up in Israel was pretty great. Actually, I had everything I needed. My parents provided me for everything. And that was due to their hard work. Just imagine, they left Ukraine. They left the language. They left their home. They left a job. Everything, and moved to Israel. And they didn't even speak a word in Hebrew. Now, Hebrew, it's a difficult word to speak, right? To pronounce stuff. It's impossible. And for Russian, it's even much more worse. So, but they did think that it's worth it, only for the chance to be equal. So growing up in Israel was pretty awesome for me. I don't know. I had a lot of friends. I could have hiked a lot, the thing that I love. I could have played music, if you can see there. And Israel, as tiny as it is, you probably know that it's got all different landscapes. They got snow in the north. They got the beautiful desert in the south. Tel Aviv, the party city that everybody loves. And of course, Jerusalem, the holy city that everybody just wants just to visit there. Also in my youth, I was a part of the Israeli scouts. Now, I don't know exactly the scouts here, but the scouts in Israel, it's a pretty cool thing. I don't know what's going on here, but back in Israel, the scouts are part of the community. It's a place that you can volunteer in. You can help your community, help it grow, help the people in the community, educate young children to become better people, to be involved in their community, to care. And those are my friends, if you can see, from the scouts. Those are my friends till this day, my very best friends till this day. And I'm thankful for it. As you can see here, there's a lot of party going on in Israel. And disguises in the bottom, if you can see. As a Jew that was born in Ukraine, it was really important to me to stay in touch with the community in Ukraine. So for the last couple of years, I've been going to Ukraine to visit the community, to help them, the Jewish community over there, to help them. To play with their kids, to celebrate the holidays with them, because they're like my second family. If you can see there, it's like, I love those photos. It just makes them happy, put a smile on their faces. But growing up in Israel was, as you can see, was really good, really excellent for me. I'm not going to change it for the world. But there was a couple of bad things that I remember. Back in the early 2000s, when I was about 12, the second intifada started. And the second intifada, as you probably know, was the terrorist, sadly, terrorist from the West Bank in Gaza decided that they're just going to terrorize the people of Israel. They're going to murder them. They're going to butcher them in the most normal places, basically. If you can see here, this is a Sparrow restaurant in Jerusalem. A terrorist just walked in and blew himself up, killing dozens of people, innocent people, kids, babies, women, children. And that happened almost every day during that time. Buses were being blown up. People were murdered in the street. It was so scary walking in the street, and I was 12, 13. You had to look over your shoulder all the time. Maybe you'll see something suspicious, something is gonna, I don't know, just, that looks different. Now, I kept seeing that on the news. Again, I was 13, 12. And it happened all over Israel, from the south to the north, from the east to the west, in Jerusalem, Haifa, Tel Aviv. But it never happened in my city. So I thought it's like a movie. My parents were terrified, of course. But for myself as a kid, I thought it's like somewhere. Not in Israel, I don't know. Never happened to me. It all changed when I was 14, in 2002. I remember that all of my family was sat together in the living room. I live in the center of the city, by the way. I live like right in the center of the city between the central bus station and the city park. We were sitting in the living room. We were watching my parents' favorite TV show, something from Ukraine, I don't know, don't ask me. And suddenly this huge explosion shook the apartment. Now, it was something that, it was the first time I heard something like that. Something so different. It's definitely not natural, like, I don't know, like a gunshot or something like that, something that you can understand. Because that explosion was so loud, I was terrified. I remember my knees began to shake. My stomach got all turned upside down. I could hardly breathe. I couldn't, what's going on? I was 14, what's going on? It was so strong. My windows in my apartment cracked. My parents immediately jumped, of course. But all Israelis need to exactly know what happened. So they opened carefully the window. They opened it really carefully. And we can see people running. People screaming. People crying. We can see ambulances coming. Police vehicles. Fire departments. Everything. So we turned on the television. We wanted to understand exactly what happened. And apparently, in the city park, which is like 2 blocks from my home. 2 blocks, really. It was on my route to school every morning and afternoon coming back. As you can see here, if you please show the photo. This is the place. A terrorist, he was 17 years old. 17 years old. He saw that place. This place is in the city park, located again 2 blocks from my home. This is the place where the seniors of the city get together in the evenings and just play chess. Play cards, meet their friends, talk. He decided that he's going to stand in the middle of that structure and blow himself up. And he blew himself up. He could kill 2 people. One of them was 65 years old, somebody's grandfather, that didn't do anything that is even remotely involved in the conflict. 65 years old. The second one was a 16-year-old boy that happened to be in the wrong time and the wrong place. He rode his skateboard close to the structure and sadly he lost his life. Now, that terrorist used an explosive vest, and inside of it, of course, if you know, to maximize the damage, they put nails and like marbles and ball barrels like that, just to maximize the damage. And that's what happened. This is the memorial that was built after the terror attack. And it says that in the date Yud Aleph Bestivan Tashtab, it's the Hebrew date, May 5th, 2002, a terrorist killed 2 people and injured 51 citizens of the city. Now, I was terrified. Even going to school now was like something that I need to put myself together, and to walk in that place every day, I can't even begin to remember. It was just so scary for me. A couple of years have passed, and I had to recruit to join the army. And that image of that terror attack that was close to my place was in the back of my mind. And I wanted to understand exactly why. I wanted to understand the other side. So I decided to join the Koget unit, the same unit that Chen served as well. Koget stands for Coordinator of Government Activities in the Territories. And basically what the unit does is maintaining the normal life of the Palestinians that are not involved in the conflict. Now imagine, like, this is a whole unit, thousands of soldiers. They're taking care of the other side, of the Palestinians. Because we understand that behind the conflict, we have people that just want to live. And the majority of the Palestinians, they just want peace, the same as we do. This is me when I finished my officer school with my parents on the picture up top. And in the middle, you can see this is the commander of the unit. He's a major general, the second in command in the IDF. His name is Yusuf Mishleb. By that name, you can understand maybe that he's not Jewish. He's not Jewish. He's an Israeli Arab. And that shows you that Israeli Arabs are part of the Israeli society. They're integrated. They can fit in. They can do whatever they want. Those are my friends from officer school. As you can see, we try to act tough, but we're not. But I started my service after the officer school. I started my service in Erez Crossing, which is located in Gaza Strip. After that, I moved to Ramallah, which is the major city of the West Bank. It was fun, don't worry. It was like the biggest city of the West Bank, their central, the cultural center. And I finished my service in Jenin, which is located in the northern of the West Bank. And it used to be the capital of terror. Yeah, but the time I arrived, everything, I fixed everything, and it was pretty fine. So don't worry. Serving that unit, like, showed me that the IDF has a lot of work to do. Like, imagine the Israel society, it needs to juggle between the need for security, the will to help other people, fighting terrorism. It's like this juggle that someday, sometime, the drop will fall. But that unit helped the other side, and I was really proud of being a commander in that unit. And I want to share just one story out of many others that I have serving in Jenin. It was a weekend. And usually on the weekends, the soldiers are going home because they're just being sent home for a short break. And just to clarify something, that soldiers in Israel serve in Israel, not like other countries that deploy their soldiers somewhere in a foreign land. In Israel, the base, for example, from my home to the base was an hour and a half. This is nothing, by bus, by public transportation, not even by my car. We know that we need to protect our borders because we have such a tiny country that needs protection 24/7, like since the establishment of Israel. So it was a weekend, and I remember we got a phone call from the Palestinian Authority, and they told us there had been an horrific car accident, and they need our help. And that happened on a daily basis, by the way. They call us if they need anything. There's a good coordination, especially in my district, in Jenin district. We immediately took the jeep, me and another officer. We went over there. It was like 2 miles from our base. And it was really close to the border with Israel, to the checkpoint. We arrived over there. And we saw like 4 cars, all of them smashed into each other. It was like a huge mess. And we thought that we need to help. We need to do something about it. We need to help them in any way that is possible. Sadly, a couple of people died because of the car wreck before we arrived. But there were some people that we knew that we need to save. And the only way to save them was to take them into an Israeli hospital, which was the closest one. And maybe you know that, but the medical system in Israel is one of the best in the world, and especially in the Middle East. So we knew that the best way and the most reasonable way to save them was to take care, sorry, to take them out into Israel. We immediately called everyone that we can. Like, we called the checkpoint that the transaction will be as smooth as possible. We called the hospital there. We have Palestinians coming for you. We need to take care of them. The Red Crescent was already there. And it took the injured to the checkpoint, and an Israeli ambulance came because the Palestinian ambulance can get out of the West Bank, and the Israeli, he was in the checkpoint. And in a procedure called back-to-back, when you just take the Palestinian from the Palestinian ambulance into the Israeli one, this is why they call it back-to-back, because it's back-to-back. And the reason that we notified everyone, and especially the checkpoint, is sadly because that in the past, both in Gaza and in the West Bank, terrorists use ambulances as a way to disguise themselves and to infiltrate Israel and to explode themselves in Israel territory or in the checkpoint. So because we were there from the beginning of the accident, we knew that everything is okay and they can trust us. Of course, we escorted the ambulance to the border. The Palestinians got arrived to the Israeli hospital. They were treated. In a couple of days, they were sent back to their homes, alive and well. And I'm really proud of that. It was the one action that, one out of many that we did. It was amazing to see it. It doesn't matter if you're a Palestinian, Israeli, Jewish, Christian, Muslim. It doesn't matter. A life is a life, and Israel understands that. Israel understands that every life is valuable. It was my honor serving in that unit and being a commander in that unit. And you can see here a lot of, if you can just please. During the operation in Gaza, if you can see, Chen talked about it a little bit. Those are trucks going into Gaza during war. Humanitarian aid, food, goods that they need to keep them alive, to maintain their, as much as we can, their normal life. This is actually an Israeli ambulance that is treating sick Palestinians to take them into Israel, something that happens on a daily basis. During the operation, the last operation that Chen talked about, Protective Edge, we knew that someone needs to take care of the humanitarian needs of the Palestinians in Gaza. So the IDF opened a field hospital in Erez Crossing, which is located in the border with Gaza. Because we knew that Hamas is not going to take care of them. It's just going to use them and just throw them away under the bus. Israel opened a field hospital during war to keep those people alive and to help them. And this is actually my commander in the army. His name is Sharon. This is he treating this young boy. And if you heard about this huge war, civil war that's going on in Syria right now, more than hundreds of thousands of people have died already. Guess who's treating them? Israel. Israel opened a field hospital in the Golan Heights to treat those wounded Syrians. They're just one help, and their regime is not going to do it. So they come to Israel, and you can see the headline. We saw that Israelis are not monsters, as they told us on the media. This is just crazy. I do believe that peace is possible. I do believe it's going to happen, I hope sooner than later. The key for that is going to be education, mutual understanding, understanding the other side, what he wants. And it's going to happen. It doesn't matter, again, if you're Israeli, Palestinian, Muslim or Jewish, we all just want peace. And we won't let those terror organizations destroy it. And with hard work, we're gonna get there. Thank you. You guys are really great. It was my first talk. I would just like to add just one thing. It was my first talk, as you know. I would really love if you'll come after that and give me some inputs or everything you have to say. I would really appreciate it. Thank you very much. You've been great. Thank you.
Ken, once you could come on up, Ken, and we'll have, does anyone have any questions that they would like to ask at this time? Come forward here and use the mic. Right here.
Okay. Okay. So you have Arab Palestinians. How do you know when a Palestinian person goes into the military that they're not going to be, you know, anti-Israeli?
An Arab Israeli?
Yeah.
Working? So, when you mentioned Yusuf Mishlev is an Israeli Jew. There's different minorities in Israel. It's not just Jewish. And, you know, if an Israeli Arab citizen, if he's a Muslim, if he's a Christian, it doesn't matter who he is. If he wants to join the army and he wants to defend Israel, he can join. There was cases in the past that, you know, there's fringe extremists in every society, and even sometimes when there's Jewish soldiers that refuse to join in the army, or when they join, they're doing bad stuff. I mean, you can't really, if we'll try to control something like that, it will not be, I don't think it will be the right approach. So there's also questioning all the time. So it doesn't matter if you're Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, and you want to join the army, or if you're atheist. If you want to join the army, you have to go through tests and questioning, and there's no separate type of questioning for different kind of population.
Well, one thing you might address, and correct me if I'm wrong, but for example, the Christian Arabs aren't obligated to join the IDF mm-hmm. like the Jewish Arabs are. Yeah. So the Christian Arabs, they literally do volunteer. And there's a lot in Nazareth, I believe, right. Now there's a right. big movement.
Yeah, and Father Gabriel Nadav is leading, he's a Christian, not sure which stream exactly, but he's an Arab Christian.
Greek Orthodox,
right? And there's a movement now to recruit more Christians to the Israeli army, because they are part of our people. I mean, part of our people, and I feel like I think that many of them see what goes on in the Middle East and what goes on, just like I said before, in Iraq and across the Middle East, where Christians are being killed every day, and the population is decreasing. The only place that Christians and Muslims and any other minority is protected in the Middle East these days is Israel. People had hope about Turkey, but Turkey is not going anywhere good at the moment. No other country is. So, yeah. Tamir, if you want to add something?
I'll try and be brief. But I got really angry about this, you know, just being safe and cozy in America. I got really angry last summer when some woman got on the news in San Francisco, honest to God, 60-some years old like me, and managed to say that Hamas was just shooting toy rockets into Israel right over the border there. She literally spoke like at a university, and she had credentials. I don't know what kind of idiotic woman she was to literally claim, well, there's nothing really going on over there. They're making a big deal out of nothing. The Hamas, even though they're a terrorist organization, she didn't talk about that. She said they're just shooting toy rockets, for God's sakes. And these people in San Francisco were listening to this, and I don't know, buying it hook, whatever that expression is. And guess what? I did it in my email. I have to listen to this dork. It was awful. It was just awful.
Yes. Really? Well, I go there every year, and when we go to Stay Road, and we go to the police station, and we see all the toy rockets.
don't know if she would mind if some toy rockets will be launched at her house. I'm sure she wouldn't like that. So I don't know. It's not toy rockets. It's real and it's scary and it strikes, and when it strikes, it explodes.
My family and I, we pray for you guys. We pray regularly, daily. What can we pray for you personally? We can put that on our prayer list. We'll make it something that we can do on a personal basis and, you know, within the cities, the well-being, anything particular that you would like our support for?
Your mama.
Pray for my mom, yeah.
For our families, for our health, for our education, and it will be enough. That's it. We just don't want more.
Yeah, for my mom, yeah, for sure. For my dad, for my brother. Who else do I want you to pray for? But, you know, I think there is the quote that bless Israel and you'll be blessed, right? Bless Israel and know that through your work and through you educating other and you supporting organizations like Stand With Us and coming here and being involved in it, you're blessing Israel. That's really what it means. So that means the word to me and to Tamir, and to know that there's people like you out there. So that's just so you know that that's enough. Anything more, we're honored and humbled by it.
Thank you.
I'd like to know how you pick the colleges that you go to. I have a grandson that's over in Cheney, Washington. I'd love to have him hear you.
In other words, should we call a school, or do they have to have a student in the school to suggest you come?
So that's one of the biggest difficulty that we have. I mean, if I'll take Evergreen College down in Olympia, an email to tell us which school he's at. Even if you're not in the Northwest, if you're listening, because I know, Mark, you have a huge followers that are watching us right now. We are active all over the country, and we also have offices in Europe, and we're now opening an office in Shanghai. I don't know if you're in Shanghai and you hear us, but you can all email us, and we would make sure to bring someone to speak, someone to help out. We know how tough the situation is on some college campuses that are passing BDS resolution, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions, that are calling to boycott, divest, and sanction the only Jewish state in the world. Inherently racist, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. Right? Okay, yeah. Inherently racist, horrible movement that they're gaining control and gaining momentum. So we need to stand up and we need to fight that. And to fight that, your students can invite us and we'll come. We'll make sure to take care of it, and we'll send speakers there. So, yeah.
Great question.
Oh, thank you. Are there opportunities for people like me to volunteer in Israel?
Yeah. In Israel or from here to Israel? From here to Israel, yes. Stand With Us is always looking for people to help us out. We have so much work, and Rob, I mean, I commend Rob. I salute you every day for the work that you're doing. Rob is by himself fighting over, 21 anti-Israel organizations that we have in the Pacific Northwest? 68.
There are 68 anti-Israel organizations just in Washington State.
And there's Rob.
Go, Rob. Let's give it for Rob.
So Rob needs help, and if you guys can help us out in volunteering and coming to the office in Seattle, or even from here, starting a group here and getting support from Rob to reach out to other churches. Let me tell you a secret: not all churches like Israel, which is we were just at the Presbyterian Church that in Seattle that they accepted us and wanted to hear our side, but On the other hand, last year they had a boycott resolution, divestment resolution from Israel in the Presbyterian Church nationally that was passed. And that's because there's a well-funded, a well-oiled machine that is the BDS movement, the anti-Israel movement, that they're popping up everywhere, from churches to high schools to college campuses. We are now dealing with a new phenomenon on high schools. Our high school students are going to school and they listen to these lies, and they listen to, they, each teacher is now getting this box filled
Palestinian
with
trunk, like the Holocaust trunk that used to go around. Now they have a Palestinian trunk that's going around.
Yeah, and that's what, and teachers get it, and they're saying, oh, that looks nice. I'll teach my students that Israel has no right to exist, without understanding even. So if people like you can be there, can go to these high schools, can invite Tamir to speak, can invite us to do it, can help us with connections and help Rob, I think that will be amazing. So please stay and also talk to Rob after that and send us an email. And we need help. We really need help. We are a few against many. Don't lose hope. We were always few against many. We will win, but we need help. We need to fight.
One other thing is editorials. I know we have some people here that write editorials. Yeah, I'll bet you there's probably a lot of homeschool
we can't get in there because there's no
that are around
that will
some larger,
us.
You know, that you might be able to really get into. And I know most
so
all of them would be very pro-Israel.
So we would love to. You can contact us at
definitely love to. Any contact, any group.
Northwest.
Even if you
at
in your home you want
com,
to invite
some of your friends, you have
a group
Northwest
of people. At
I'm sure we can find some time that we are around to come.
Shoot us an email, tell us about your school if you're
share
watching
stories,
online and you want us to come.
As I said before, you know, we can try with numbers, we can give the statistics. All of the facts are on our side. That's another secret. We are right. The other side is wrong. But people connect to people. And people connect to warm bodies. And if you bring in an Israeli guy, a warm Israeli guy like Tamir, that's enough, you know. He has a cute face. I don't, but at least you get at least you'll get Tamir. So that bring Tamir over, yeah.
To let you know, I was with the Presbyterian Church. I left the Presbyterian Church because of the boycott. And where are the places where we can invest our funds into? The stores, the shops, more and more of us I know have gone up to different places, to the delis, to support. Is there on your website a place?
We're about to launch a website with list of places to that you can go and shop at. But not only shop there, but if, even if you're going to, I don't know, a Safeway type of place and they sell, not Safeway, Target, they sell SodaStream machines, and you know that it was made in Israel, go to the customer service and say, I love this product. That's what they're doing. They're going to, we added with Sur LaTab just last year, that the anti-Israel movement has all went to the website of Sur LaTab. It's a company, it's a business that sells kitchen items, and they gave the lowest score to all of the Israeli products, and they said, you know, the SodaStream machine, the strawberry flavor is horrible and Israel should not exist and things like that, which was was funny, but you guys can do it. You can give high scores to Israeli products. Go to the shops when you see an Israeli product, go to the customer service and say, I want this product on the shelf because I'm coming here for this product. You can all do it. It takes 2 minutes and it makes a huge difference. So yeah.
And you touched on some points with I'm an idealist and I've long since hated the yellow journalistic type of reporting of news. And my question is, are there news agencies who would portray true and actual facts of events? And how hard would it be to start and maintain one?
That's a good question. You know, you always need to filterize, I feel. I feel like you need to look at different... that's what I do. I look at different media sources to get something in the middle, and even then I can't really know what's the middle ground. There's a Jew Jazeera It's you know, a lot of time there was a lot of criticism about Al Jazeera. Why don't we have a Jew Jazeera? So they started one. It's called I-24 News. You can find it online. It's kind of non-biased. I mean, even they sometimes are critical of Israel, but usually they're very centrist, and you can get good information. So it's I-24 News. Also, go to the CIA website. They have a lot of news about the Middle East, and that's very balanced, I feel. You know, I don't think they let the administration or whoever is in power in America to affect their reporting, so it's really balanced always. And avoid the New York Times, avoid the BBC, avoid the CNN.
How would you compare Haaretz to Arut Sheva to Jerusalem Post? I mean, if you're looking at an Israeli news source.
To help, and like you said, just contact.
Yeah, Times of Israel is probably a good alternative to
Haaretz. Do you guys go also to large homeschool co-ops?
Haaretz is not my favorite newspaper, I can say. I think they're not their own favorite newspaper either. They're not doing good work. It's not journalism, even. You know, it was one thing if it was good journalism criticizing Israel, but it becomes this hate rant about Israel all the time in Haaretz. So you can't even get the news there. I think that many anti-Israel people love reading it because it gives them what they want to hear. So yeah, there's alternatives. Times of Israel, El Gamineir, I'm not sure how to say it. El Gamineir? El Jaminer, yes. Mida is a website too that is good.
Is there a good website also that lists West Bank, for the lack of a better term, industries that people can invest in or support?
Foreign Ministry, they have a website about it? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I know of some. We are going to launch the website that we wanted to, but we can definitely put up a list for you guys and then send it in an email. You mean invest in projects?
Yes, all different kind of way. We want to, just the opposite of BDS, we want to invest in Israeli companies.
Right. Yeah. So that's exactly the website that we're working on. We have something now online that it's Buy Israeli Goods, buyisraeligoods.com. It's not really updated, but you still can find some. Right. The website that we're working on is something that is going to be socially driven. So you can let us know, hey, I found this Israeli product in this store, send people there, and then we will update it.
So that would be great, list of companies or even a list of products, because some people don't know, like SodaStream is Israeli, you know, so something, anything like that would be great.
I want to thank you awesome gentlemen for coming and for speaking. I want to encourage you to keep those awesome values that Hashem has installed. He's our commander in chief. Your compassion towards what we consider our enemy, this is a very important ingredient. This is the one that's absolutely missing. Our country has the same problem as your country. We have the Muslim faith belief. Actually, humanity has that. And until they address it and have a desire to address it, the battle is going to go on for a little while longer. Eventually, they will lose. We win in the end. So just keep your spirits as high as you can. And remember, our commander-in-chief, Hashem.
My question for you, this is the first time I've ever attended the service you guys have here. My question is, I noticed here recently on Facebook, which is far from accurate, and it's really getting more and more suppressed all the time. In my time, all the quality time, if you will, that I've spent in the Middle East, in places like Jordan, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and all that, I noticed I spent about 3 or 4 weeks in Amman, Jordan. And when I was walking around the shops and stuff, I noticed this. And I expected it from these Muslim people and stuff. You know, the whole occupier, Zionist, this and that, and everything else. But I'm starting to see, because our media over here is just as controlled as our government. And I mean, and I'll just tell you right now, I don't know how y'all. I bet I could almost guess what you think. But that whole thing with Netanyahu being here last week and stuff, the American people hated the way our government treated your man, okay? I'm just going to tell you. We were all, you just got to understand, our government does not represent what you see out here. all right? It's not who it is. People like me, as far as I'm concerned, you can take the West Bank, you can take Gaza back, and you can take the Arabian Peninsula, and I'll go over there and help you do it. I was in the military for 5 years. All right? My question is this. This whole Zionist, my wife found an article here recently, and it was this guy, and it shows this picture of, like, heads being cut off babies in Palestine. And then there's, like, this crying Jew baby, and they're all CNN and all these people are filming on the crying baby thing. And this guy talks about how the Jews aren't really the Jews and that they're all Zionists and they're occupiers. And I looked at it, I read about two sentences, and I was done. I mean, I knew where it was coming from. How do you effectively, being from there, combat that? What is your dialogue? What do you guys put forth, and what are y'all saying about that? You know, what, and what's an effective way, and what kind of material can we use, perhaps, to say, hey, look, you know what I mean? It's obvious to me, if you weren't Jewish, they wouldn't be fighting you. But this is far greater than anything that's got blood in the veins right now. This is a God thing, and we all know that the enemy hates what Yahweh stands for and what he's about. So that's my question for you, supporting you, man.
Mention that you have those.
Media is biased. Anybody here?
No one, really?
But we also have a lot of good literature from Stand With Us that we also try to make available. It's on their back table every Saturday morning at our services. We try to have some great literature to pass out.
Yeah, we have. We are the biggest producers of pro-Israel literature. All of our material is approved by the American Ministry of Education, so it's unbiased. We are standing with Israel and we're showing the facts, but it's just facts. And it's facts that they can destroy the argument of the other side.
There's
nonsense about Jewish baby crying and CNN reporters. Come on. I mean, we saw the pictures this summer. We saw the videos this summer. We saw the news. We know which side the media has covered. You see on one side of the screen someone from Gaza with a bulletproof vest and a helmet and everything. And the other side in Tel Aviv, they love showing how they're going, with a T-shirt that is open on that have a V-neck and is in the sun. So just to see this picture, you're saying, wait, one side is clearly is under attack and the other one is having fun. No, the other one is defending its civilians. The Hamas side is not defending its civilians and it's not safe there because of that. But people can't see it, and if not a lot of people are as smart as you to actually look at it and say, well, this is nonsense. It's not doesn't even make sense. So. So yeah, research in standwithus.com. We have tons of information for you guys. Just go there, Israel 101. We have material. We have talking points that you can really... It's important to educate ourselves about the facts. You know, the facts do matter, but you can use that. I mean, I learned a lot. As an Israeli, I learned a lot from Stand With Us website.
Well, one other thing. If you come to our website, since you're relatively new here, we have links to website like honestreporting.com, Palestinian Media Watch. They show you all the Photoshop things that you see on television, how things, the media's Photoshopped images. They say it happened in one place, but it actually happened somewhere else. I've seen a video where during one of the little wars, they were carrying supposedly a Palestinian on a stretcher as if he had died. In the next scene, he's off the stretcher talking to other people. You know, I mean, a lot of this is staged. But you go to our website, elshaddaiministries.us, you go to the Israel links. We have all kinds of links to newspapers as well as to, honest reporting. Let's thank them for coming. We sure appreciate them. And Rob and the two young ladies that you brought with you, thank you so much for being here. So we have all kinds of great material back there. If you're new here, you're dismissed. Be blessed. Amen. those little Stand With Us packets. You guys should have brought some. We didn't have any. But the Stand With Us at their website, I believe, has literature that you can, they'll just send you all kinds of good literature that gives you the facts of what's really happening in the Middle East to help combat. How many of you think our